The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We'll kick things off with the North London Derby. Arsenal impressive as they beat Spurs by 3-1. It puts Arsenal now 4 points clear at the top of the league table. For more on this, Jan Arga Fjortov joins us. Jan, you're at the game. Arsenal worthy winners?
I would say so. It feels like Emirates is a home of Arsenal again. Great atmosphere, great pressure. And as Craig was saying, Tottenham's too deep. You may say that, are they played deep by Arsenal or is this original plan for them? I think it's a mixture of it. But I think that was a deserved win. They were a bit clumsy, as you saw by the penalty, giving that away. And Kane, who always scores in these North London derbies, but it came out in the second half and were brilliant. And there were some decisive minutes, of course, with that royal red card that I think it's... I'm with Craig on that one. For me, it's a red card and deservedly top of the league.
And we'll talk about the red card in detail a little bit later on. But just focusing on Arsenal for now. Big statement.
Yeah, a continuation of, in fact, probably even better than what it's been. The two big games that they've been labelled as having to get a result, Man United and this one, they've played well in both. Now, I thought they learned a lot of the lessons from the Man United game. Did not get caught on the counter as much. Got caught sometimes. As Jan said, did look a little bit of the old Arsenal panicky when Harry Kane scored the penalty, but settled himself back down again. And I thought played some great football. I thought the two guys in midfield, Xhaka and Partey, sort of dominated in there. There was always a threat from the wide positions. Odegaard was instrumental. And Gabriel Jesus, again, did some magical things within the game. And if you look at the stats alone, they'll tell you it was a dominant performance.
What's happened to Xhaka? He was kind of a laughing stock, booed by his own fans, of course. Seems to have turned it around completely.
Yeah, I mean, he's never been a bad player, but he's always had, I think, just bad discipline and bad things in his head in terms of making rash decisions. And I think that will creep up now and again. But I think for the main part, he's sort of tempered that. And he's concentrating on what he does well. And that's, you know, plays well, his experience. When Zinchenko goes forward, he moves across. And sometimes Zinchenko comes into midfield. So it's looking good. And they look pretty solid at the back. I don't think it's going to be a title. But my God, it is night and day from where they've been the last couple of years.
Xhaka Hislop joins us as well. Xhaka, Arsenal the second best team in England at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing thing to see this deep in the competition. I'm not sure we would have thought that much. But sitting nicely on top of the table. And as Craig said, I thought got a big result in their second big test of the season. I think they were deserving of it. At times, I thought they defended really nervously. This total football from Arteta leaves you with some panicky moments at the back. And I thought you saw that in the goal, in the way Granit Xhaka, for some reason, tried to cushion a ball back to Gabriel, I think it was. But in the end, over the course of the game, I thought Arsenal were deserving of it. But it was made far simpler by the red card. I disagree with Jan and Craig. I thought it was a yellow. But if you're Arsenal, you're taking it and you're sitting nicely top of the table.
All right, then. And Shaka's brought it up. Let's talk about the red card. Remember after the Chelsea-Spurs game, Conte said, I never talk about referees.
I always said in the past that I didn't like to comment the referee decision. In the past, I commented the VAR decision because I think that with the monitor, with the video, is really, really difficult to get a best decision, okay? They have to work, I think, a lot about this. In Italy, for example, our referee, they go on Thursday and stay together 3 days to work together, to look video, to try to improve. I think maybe, I don't know if this happened in England, but could be a good idea because the level is so high and we need to have the level of the referee, of the VAR, in the same level, you understand? Because Premier League is a really high level. And for this reason, every part of this situation, in my opinion, has to be top. Yeah.
Yeah, because they never have bad refereeing decisions in Italy.
No, we think back to the Juventus game.
I think this red card is, whether you agree with it or not, is an ideal opportunity for him to mask over that his team was second best.
Sure. Sure.
Because now he's in the press conference, and I'm sure he was asked about the game, but he's been asked about the red card, and he's using that almost as an excuse. His team did not perform. Now, they had their moments on the counter-attack. That was no surprise. We all knew that was the way they were going to play. But they were a little too negative. They gave up a little too much ground to Arsenal. And Arsenal played in the exact same manner in which we fought. And you and I were coming in. We were listening to, on the radio, Conte was saying, oh, we're not quite ready for all this yet, and it's a pathway. It's just an excuse for being on the day second best with a squad of players that really, head-to-head, were no match for Arsenal on this occasion.
Yep, we ride in together these days. How fortunate I am.
Somebody needs a lift.
Luis Garcia joins us as well. Luis, I know you didn't see this game, but you did see the incident. Where do you stand? Should that have been a red card?
Yes, I think it was a red card. I mean, it's a dreadful challenge. You are right, Blaine. Maybe the intention it wasn't that one, but the ball is very far away from the player. Yeah, arrived in a very high on his leg, and well, as soon as he realized where he has touched with the studs, he knows that is something that is going to be nearly to that red card, and then the referee decided to get it. Of course, in some ways, some people will say no, but it wasn't enough. Why? Because the player on the floor stood up and continued playing. That's not good enough. I think that he didn't mean to do it that high, but it was late, it was too high. So for me, it's a red card.
I tell you what, it's a red card for me. And if Emerson Royale had made that challenge and had minutely missed the ball, maybe I'd have said, OK, I'm all right with a yellow. But he had no intent in playing the ball. It was a cynical challenge and it was a dangerous challenge. And because the ball was not in play, and all of those reasons, I agree with Anthony Taylor, it was a red card.
We see that Jan has his hand up. Jan?
Yeah, I'm just saying, at the stadium when it happened, the referee took some time before he made a decision. Yeah, I think it got on his ear. They will never admit that, but it took him some time. But I'm sure that he got in his ears saying that is a reckless tackle. You have to just make sure that is a red card. Because as I was seeing it live from the stadium, I thought, OK, he will give a yellow, you know. But when you see it live straight afterwards, when you see it on the TV in the replay, I think it's a clear red card. And you can't say this is happening all over the pitch all the time. Well, I don't think that is the best proof you can have in a court.
Shaka, have they persuaded you you're wrong?
I understand that this divides opinion. It was one of them, again, that could have gone either way. For me, even after seeing the replays, I just continue to feel it was a yellow. But I'm happy to stand alone on that hill.
He's buckling down like Stevie. Stevie's not here. He's having a bad day, Stevie, because Arsenal look good.
He
sat at home watching this. He'll be cussing us at the moment.
Well, not only do Arsenal look good, Liverpool once again dropped points today. Of course, a 3-3 draw against Brighton. It leaves them 11 points already off Arsenal at the top of the table. It was a great game to watch, but you take a look at it, finished off course at 3-3. Brighton were 2-0 up. Liverpool got back into the game to make it 3-2. A late goal, though, from Trossard to complete his hat-trick would give both teams a point. A lot of question marks once again about the Liverpool defending throughout this tie, as good as they were going forward. Once again, at the back, they looked vulnerable.
He did, and a couple of players and that have been highlighted in recent weeks, Trent Alexander-Arnold, who has been at the forefront of a lot of the criticism, and Virgil van Dijk, who has had some criticism and hasn't liked it. Talked about pundits and ex-players that should know better and blah, blah, blah. He's playing on the big stage. He's not mastering that defence like he was. He's making mistakes himself, and Liverpool are just not good enough defensively at the moment.
This is what Jurgen Klopp had to say after the game.
The confidence level is now not extraordinarily high. I cannot say that I was 100% convinced that we will not concede a goal when we were 3-2 up. And then scored a goal. We should have defended all three goals better. That's no doubt about that. But in different areas, not the last moment, already earlier, we should have defended better. Yeah, they scored 3-3, and that feels, again, like a defeat, even when it's not a defeat.
Jürgen Klopp kind of summing up the emotions of all Liverpool fans at the moment. Luis still with us. Luis, what's wrong with your former team?
Well, I think it's one word that Jürgen stood out to me, that is that the confidence levels are not the same. And that's the way that you can see this team. You could see that the team looks better than 3-4 weeks ago, where the distances between the lines were massive. There were no links in between the midfield and the strikers. You could see very good moments in the game today, how they react after conceding two goals and the way that they turn over the game, scoring three goals. But at the end, it's true that you could see that they look vulnerable. The mistakes at the back, they've been punished them very much. Every single time that they make one or two mistakes right there, they've been punished. The Brighton, we cannot take away any credit from them because they did a fantastic job, very intense, knowing that Alexander-Arnold at the moment is not in his best moments of confidence. You can see they look sloppy sometimes, that he's out of position. Because of his confidence when he's on the ball, he tried to relax sometimes too much. And when you're in defense, you have to be very focused, very concentrate what you got in your bar, have a look. Once again, he's from that right side where everything is starting in the last goal for Brighton. So at the end, he's a few misunderstandings at the bar, a few maladjustments. Of course, Jürgen Klopp is trying to work on that, but still far away from the team that everybody's expecting, and they need to continue working. I think that the talent is there. I think that the team is still in good position to get back and get in the top four, but to try to reach the first position is going to be very difficult this year, and get closer to those top four as well is not going to be easy.
The thing is, Shaka, defensively, this isn't a one-off. It's consistently what we've seen all season, and Klopp doesn't seem to have the answer at the moment.
No, they don't. There's no sense of urgency around how Liverpool defends. I went into this game wanting to have a close look at Van Dijk and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who, of course, have come in for a lot of criticism, see how they'd cope. Trent Alexander-Arnold clearly lacking confidence, but then trying to do the things that he did when he was playing with that confidence, and he's getting caught out every time, and no sense of urgency around his defending. That's on an individual level. On a bigger picture, I just feel like Liverpool have lost a lot of their identity. There was a time when playing against Liverpool was going to be the most difficult 90 minutes of the season, particularly at Anfield. And yet, I didn't get that feeling around today's game against Brighton. Brighton jump out to a 2-0 lead, a 2-0 deserved lead. Mm. And then even at 3-2, if you look at the build-up to Brighton's goal, Brighton have possession in their back four, and Liverpool back all the way to just about, what, 3 or 4 yards short of the half line. I cannot remember when last I saw Liverpool do that. There was a time when no matter where you had the ball, you were under pressure. That wasn't the case. Then all of a sudden, Diaz decided to press the ball. They just passed by him because he was just running all on his own, and Brighton equalised to make it 3-3. And that, for me, just said that Liverpool have lost their own confidence in who they are as a unit defensively and all over the park. And as a result, they're struggling.
You used to, as Shaka was saying, you used to get off the bus the last couple of years there and you would be scared stiff about what was going to be coming at you. You're just not at the moment. And I think...
But Liverpool did get themselves back into the game. They were in the lead. They were 3-2 up.
They have good players and they can do good things, but they're just making too many mistakes. It goes back to match day one, Fulham. Promoted Fulham. It was sloppy, it was slack then, and it's never really recovered. You think about the game in Naples. It was horrendous. And I think one of the things that's happened is that the Jurgen Klopp teams have been one of the best at defending from the front.
Right.
And in some sense, that intensity, particularly at home, has taken a lot of pressure off the back line because that ball is won higher up the field. Not all the times, but a lot of the times. But as Shaq said, that intensity is not there for the 90 minutes anymore. And that's putting more pressure on the midfield and more pressure on the back line.
Yeah, and is top four now what Liverpool should be aiming for?
Well, absolutely, they should be aiming for that. I think it's too early to write them off on everything, but they have to start defending. And I'm with Craig there because sometimes you say the defending start from the top, from the strikers. And as a striker, you always say, yeah, but just try to defend at the back. But what I think is a big concern for them now, Trent Alexander-Arnold, we know about his weaknesses, but what we didn't know about the weaknesses of Virgil van Dijk. I mean, this season, and as we were saying, that started at Fulham. Remember, Mitrovic had him in his pocket in that game. And there is something about his positioning. There is something about his cleverness that is just been lost at the moment. And I think that a lot of this insecurity you see at the back now is that your Minister of Defence, Virgil van Dijk, is out of it. And I think that infects the other players at the back there, which are young lads with Robertson or Trent and Arnold.
What's happened to van Dijk, Luis?
I think it's a couple of things. Now when you concede goals, of course, you're going to look at the back and you see that they are a man of judgment right there. When he's Maddy, when it was Joe Gomez, you point to Joe Gomez, now he's not there, and then we have to find Van Dijk because Maddy did a good job, but also he's not Robertson then. So when you start seeing that this is not the team in defence at the level that we are expecting, we try to find or blame the one they are not in the best form. But it's a group of things. It's starting from when you don't, the guys are talking about the intensity. When you don't have that intensity in the middle of the park, the players who are facing to you, they have time to put the ball in the best position, in the best moments, in the best runs. And then you put in danger the center back. So in that kind of moments, I think that Van Dijk is struggling because the partnership that he's got next to him is not adapting well. The players on the right areas, they are not adapting well. When one goes forward, the other one stays. The gap in between the midfield and the defense is so high. So all those small details are things that the Jurgen Klopp have to work together. But Van Dijk, pointed to Van Dijk, yeah, it's easy because now we see that they have conceded. But if the game finished 2-3-2 for Liverpool, no one is talking about Van Dijk. We are talking about Firmino and the goals he scored.
Meanwhile, of course, Graham Potter left Brighton to go to Chelsea, and he registered his first Premier League win with his new side, a 2-1 victory. It came very late. Gallagher, who else, had an absolute worldie against the side, of course, he was so impressive with last season. We'll talk about that goal in a moment, but let's focus on the big talking point, shall we, which both managers discussed after the game. This was just in the 32nd minute. Thiago Silva clearly with the handball, only given a yellow card. Should it have been red?
I'm actually okay with a yellow here because I think there is an instance where the player is slightly going away from goal and there's cover coming around. Now, had he been running directly through on goal there, I think it could have been a red. But I think the position on the field and the angle he was taking and then the other Chelsea players that were in the vicinity, I'm okay personally with a yellow on that occasion.
Shaka?
Yeah, I'm right on the fence with this one. I have no issue with the yellow. I'll be honest, if he was shown red, I probably wouldn't have much of an issue with that as well. It's just far out enough, it's just wide enough that you can make an argument as to why it shouldn't be red. It was one for the referee, and I agree with the call. I stand by that.
Luis Garcia.
Yeah, I'm the same with the guys. I think that the yellow card is more than enough because of what Craig just mentioned. The ball is going to in different direction. It's not going to the goal. It's a bit fight in between them when Thiago goes on the floor. So I'm happy with the yellow card. And you can see the reaction from the defenders. You can see that it's the number 21 just running behind. So I don't think that a red card should have been given. And the yellow card is the perfect choice, the perfect call.
Jan?
No, I think you can give a red card there. I think Thiago Silva, I'm in danger of breaking any rules here because if I don't find the rules, it's not only the thing that he's going straight through the goalkeeper. Thiago Silva got a ball under control, so the Chelsea defenders are on their way forward. So I think that could be a red card, and I think that was a wrong decision. I'm with Patrick Vieira here, who was furious after that decision.
Yeah, Patrick Vieira not happy. Potter came out and said it's 50-50. You could understand Vieira.
Well, I think the lingo is denying a clear goal-scoring opportunity.
Yes.
And I think it's debatable whether that was going to... Now, if Thiago Silva had a turned the other way, controlling it and lost balance and dropped himself on it, then he is straight through and goal. That's a different scenario. But the angle he was taking... I'm OK with it.
He, of course, provided the assist for the opener. Christian Pulisic then setting up Gallagher. And what a winner this was, Shaq.
It really was. Everything about it. And you felt it was kind of written in the stars once the Palace fans start cheering him coming on. The way he let that ball run across him. And that first touch, you know exactly. I don't think there's anything accidental about it. He knew exactly what he was doing, where the defender was coming from, where he wanted the ball, and what he wanted to do with it. It couldn't have been more perfectly executed. What a finish. And the one thing you have to say is Potter has shown that he's prepared to drop big boys. He's prepared to make changes to get Chelsea playing as he wants them to. I don't think there's a lot of this game that he'd have been thrilled about. But Gallagher all of a sudden putting himself right in the frame for Potter as he makes some decisions going forward.
Luis, that finish was Garcia-esque.
I wish. That's a beautiful finish. I mean, the moment we've been talking a lot about Lewandowski and how his awareness of what he wanted to do inside the box, I think Gallagher did exactly that. He knew where what he was, what the defender was, the touch that he needed to do, and that comb that is beautiful with the right side to the top corner. Beautiful goal, and we love to see young players getting involved, giving points, and of course, showing that they are ready to fight in the highest level.
Done, dusted, first win under the belt. That's
what
it's about.
Yeah, we talked about it on yesterday's show. He just has to get a win under his belt. He's got some big games coming up. As Shaq said, he's not going to be frightened to make big calls, and that's the kind of job he's in now. So, yeah, I mean, difficult game going to Selhurst Park. I would say a job very well done.
Meanwhile, of course, the action continues in England on Sunday. The big game, Manchester City taking on Manchester United. City favourites to take all 3 points, as you would expect. Let's take a look at the prediction, shall we, from anyone. Is anyone not going for City? There you go. No. Everyone feels it's going to be a Manchester City victory.
Well, because this show is well known for its anti-Man United bias.
Well, yes, exactly. And that just is further evidence as to how much we hate Manchester United. Will we have egg on our face tomorrow? We'll find out. Of course, we'll be discussing that game, plus Real Madrid as well. So be sure to join us. Barcelona top of La Liga after a 1-0 victory away against Mallorca. Robert Lewandowski's a brilliant individual goal, proving to be the difference between the two sides. Luis Garcia is with us. I tell you what, Luis, what's that? 6 wins in a row now for Barca, but boy, they're made to work hard for today's victory.
Yeah, it wasn't the easiest game. We were expecting something like that. Mallorca didn't have any intentions to go open. They never lost the composure at any stage of the game. I think that's something very, very good. But at the end, they got what they needed. It's the 3 points. When you go in these kind of games, everybody expects that you have to score 3 or 4 goals. It's true that at some points it was too slow. They needed to have that patience, moving the ball to one side, the other side, to see if this Mallorca was going to step forward and try to find the net. But that wasn't the case. At the end, a couple of good chances could have gave a point to this Mallorca side. But I think the Barcelona was under control during the 90 minutes. And if they needed to maybe push another gear, I think they had it. But it was enough to get the 3 points and get the top of the La Liga's table.
Yeah, Mallorca silly didn't roll over, but Barca getting the job done. That's all that matters in this sort of situation.
As Lou says, not every game's going to be something to write home about with Lewandowski banging in 3 or 4 goals. I thought Mallorca put up a really good fight. Lots to look forward to from them. They were well organised. They got players forward. They made some poor decisions in the final third, and that maybe let Barcelona off the hook a little bit. We obviously saw that great save from Ter Stegen in the first half. So it's one of those. He got a run out for Ansu Fati, got more game time for Kessié. Piqué got some match sharpness, and they got the 3 points away from home. You can't complain.
Luis, how good was that goal from Lewandowski? Oh, we've lost Luis. Craig, how good was that goal from Lewandowski?
Got a habit of doing this.
Well, second choice. Second choice, you are.
I'll mop up. I'm not going to answer you now. You're just always looking at these players that when they get into their 30s and close to 35 that they're going to slow up and, you know, they're on borrowed time and you know, they're not going to be able to continue with the consistency. I think that's the key. You know, the Ronaldo's, Messi's, Benzema, Lewandowski. It's just consistency. It's every season. And there's no sign whatsoever that he's not going to be the talisman for this team for another year or two till he's 35, 36. So clearly he looks after himself.
He certainly does. Luis back with us. Luis, you look at this and you don't even feel he looks at the goal. It's just the awareness of where he is on the pitch.
That's football intelligence and experience. We all know the talent and ability that Lewandowski has got. So at the end, his awareness was on the field is just magnificent. You guys were talking about Benzema, Lewandowski, these kind of players, when they are near the box, they know exactly where are the defenders, where are the teammates, where the keeper is standing. They don't need to look. They have a look. They copy everything for once, just with a small glance, and they start moving and deciding what to do. And you could see Lewandowski, he controls with the left, make the cut, and he knows exactly what the keeper is going to be expecting the ball. It's the near post. So he knows if he can curve, give it that swing to that ball and get a little bit of spin, he's going to arrive that. But the power is perfect. The touch is perfect. He goes around the defender so the keeper cannot see perfectly the ball when he is leaving the foot of Lewandowski. So that awareness can give you, of course, a top talented player, but also that football intelligence who also have earned from the past 10, 15 years. That experience is always very important in these kind of players.
It's not just the goals, though, is it? And Xavi mentioned this a month or so ago. It's the attitude and it's the work rate.
Yeah.
And it's the pressing. And I think it's more than just a signing. It's a sign and a message to the other players at this club, the younger players in particular, that this is what it takes. This is the kind of physicality, the kind of mentality to be at the top for a long time. And so the goals are the headlines, but it's everything else that he does within the game that sets the standard for the team and for the younger players around him.
Not the best preparation for the Clásica as Borussia Dortmund lost 3-2 away against Köln. Once again, some questionable defensive performances from Dortmund. From on this, Jan is with us. Ah, Jan, Dortmund.
This is like repeat, Dan. We've known each other for a top club 3 years.
Yes.
And Bayern, bad spell. And then they're winning 4-0 against Leverkusen on a Friday. And then they sit down and watch Dortmund. So what can Dortmund do? Jude Bellingham, 19 years of age, captain. 1-0 up, great goal. Yeah, of course they lose. Union Berlin, they're on top of the league. They go to Frankfurt, lose 2-0. Only Freiburg could do it up there. So, I mean, Bayern don't know what to do anymore, you know, because Dortmund, they will always have some weak feet going into this game. It's hard to get to Cologne. Cologne do a great job, Baumgartner, their coach, a brilliant coach. But they should be up. They were up 1-0. They could have been up 2 or 3. But then again, turning around and breaking news, Dortmund can't defend.
Well, they do have a lot of injuries, though, Jan. Can we give them a little bit of a pass?
They always do. Again, Dan. Dortmund got a lot of injuries. Oh, here's some breaking news part two. They had Hummels out today with a cold, but they got defenders in there. Schlotterbeck, Süle, two new defenders, and they still let goals in. So we talked about this before. I think this is all about this winning mentality that they don't have. Avoid losing those kind of games. But again, it's believe, hope and love for the Clásica. We hope that Dortmund can finally do it against Bayern again. Again is the key word.
I know it's a lot of defending, but I wouldn't be happy if I was Dortmund about the Giorino situation either.
No.
It's not been fit for a while. Go on, Jan.
No, I'm just saying, Craig, exactly. And for me, it's a symbol. Look at Erling Haaland now coming to Manchester City. Have you heard about any injuries now?
He's taking care of. Yeah, and what have you done to your boy?
Yeah, I know it's a kiss of death, but I'm just saying facts at the moment. Saturday night, I'm going there tomorrow. But listen, and Rainer, that thing that's going to happen with him now, I'm so worried. I saw him crying in the Bundesliga, walking off. We just hope he was back again. They have to sort that out. Because Dortmund and injuries, I mean, this is a threat to the existence of the club.
It's not a great point. It's Berhalter did start him in both of those games.
That was my point, Jan. You'll know more about the Dortmund injury scenario than me. But here's a player who has had some injury problems, a young man, particularly this season. They're nursing him back. He then travels to play in these two friendlies, or whatever they are, for the US. Berhalter plays him. And now he's gone back again. Yeah. You know, he's injured again. So, I mean, I just don't understand. You know, it's this communication thing between clubs and players. Yeah. And if I was Dortmund and I'm nursing a player back and I send him to two international games, yes, there's a World Cup coming up, yeah. I would not yeah. be happy with the US coach in that scenario.
I agree with you. The dialogue is unbelievable. Can you imagine one of the big clubs taking one of the jewels, sending him around the world? When you know sitting in a plane is the jet lag and everything, and you have those kind of injuries, scandalous.
Jan, will you be going to the Clásica or will be stalking Haaland next weekend?
I will probably be stuck in the English room, I guess, a hotel room somewhere.
Yep, standard. You've changed, Jan. Yeah. Just a reminder then, Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich, the first Clásica of the season, live on ESPN+. Plus, coverage starts at 12 p.m. Eastern.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, what a day in Italy. Three very significant results. Roma with a 2-1 win away against Inter. Napoli, top of the table with a 3-1 win over Torino. AC Milan, meanwhile, taking all 3 points in their clash against Empoli. This is how things stand then. Napoli, 3 points clear at the top of the table. Atalanta, of course, a game in hand still to play this weekend. Roma sit fifth. Inter, meanwhile, sit seventh. As we welcome in Gab Marcotti to the show. Chris Smalling, of course, the hero, Gab.
Smaldini, as some people like to call
him. Which people, Gab?
This is a big win for... Some people. So I'm told. There was no Jose Mourinho for Roma. He was in a van with an iPad, apparently, sending instructions from outside the ground. But this was huge for Roma because, if you recall, just before the break, they played Atalanta. They battered Atalanta. They lost 1-0. Jose got sent off and why was suspended today. In this game, it was kind of the other way around. Inter, I thought, were the better team for long stretches. But the problem with this Inter team is that they can't take games home and they freak out in the wrong minutes. Roma, I thought, pretty minimalist, dropping Tammy Abraham. He went with Zaniolo, Dybala, and Pellegrini coming in from behind. And I thought Mourinho, even though he wasn't physically there, I thought this was very much a Mourinho victory, kind of, you know, kind of taking advantage of those opportunities that the opposition gives you.
He documented it on Instagram, in fact, him in the van watching the game. If you don't follow him, it's a good follow on Insta. Four defeats now already for Inter, Gab. What's going wrong?
Yeah, and guess who's next? Barcelona, right?
Yeah.
Who obviously won at the weekend. I think there's a number of wins, number of things. Brozovic didn't start in this game because he's injured. They had Aslani in. Aslani's very talented, but you could tell if you're going to play with that kind of playmaker, everybody runs through you. It's difficult to just kind of get dropped in there, especially when you're very young. Obviously, still no Lukaku. I think they're missing that presence. I don't like to talk psychology, and I don't like to talk Handanovic, but I think we need to raise both issues. The Handanovic piece is simple. On the Dybala goal, he should have done a lot better. Yeah, Dybala absolutely leathered the ball, but he had both hands on it. And the psychology is this team feels really, really insecure right now. They feel fragile. When they have a good spell, they don't seem to build on it. They then seem to freak out and kind of hand the initiative to the opposition.
Meanwhile, Milan taking the victory. Just basically fast forward to the 80th minute for this game, Gab.
Yeah, this game's Milan have five players out. They're worrying about the trip to Chelsea and the Champions League. Driving rain against Empoli, who, are what you call a plucky team, a footballing team, kind of awkward to play against. Milan did not play well. They took the lead with Rebic, who came on. And then, boom, three goals in injury time. You got to love Serie A. Empoli, who could have had a couple goals before that, they score a free kick with Bairami. Again, Tatarusano maybe could have done better on that one. And then Milan score in the 94th minute, the most unlikely guy. They almost score straight from the kickoff. It's almost as if Empoli, fall asleep celebrating their equalizer. And in the end, it's Fode Ballotore. I checked. This was his first goal since he played for Paris Saint-Germain B and was a teenager like 6-7 years ago. And then on top of that, it was irrelevant. It was garbage time, but it was really, really pretty. Rafael Leao solo run.
Yeah, it's nice.
And then the little scoop finish at the end to make it 3-1.
Meanwhile, Napoli, top of the table. Are they the real deal, Gab?
Oh, we're leaving Napoli last, the table toppers. So far, they seem to be the real deal. There's no Victor Osimhen. They took Torino apart in the first 45 minutes. So ruthless, so efficient. Zambo and Grisa getting two goals. And who else but Kvaratskhelia? Mm-hmm. Kvaramania continues to run rampant, even without Osimhen. They just had such mastery in midfield. In the second half, they just decided to play that kind of endless possession game. And eventually coming out as 3-1 winners. They didn't score more because, simply put, they didn't need to.
Gab Marcoli, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from Gab, of course, on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, reflecting on everything that happened this weekend. That drops on Monday. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bayern Munich, of course, who won yesterday and certainly silencing some of the doubters, talking about the crisis. This is the front page of Kicker. Of course, Bayern struggling domestically. Well, after that victory, Archie Rintak caught up with Nagelsmann to talk about that quote-unquote crisis.
How were the last 2 weeks for you? Because you've experienced a lot in your career already, but the wave of criticism and even, I'd say, your answer in the press conference, I can't remember hearing you like that before.
That was kind of crazy. I think it's normal when you read comments about your clothes and everything, about a skateboard, and I don't know, everything is discussed in the media. It's kind of crazy. If there are questions about soccer and the content we do in our training, that's no problem for me. I can discuss with everybody and my idea. But at the end, if it's going into personality and something like that, it's kind of crazy. But the last couple of 2 weeks were very good because a lot of time to analyze the games. And the answer is that we have the things in our own hands. We can solve our problems by doing things on the pitch a bit better than we did in the last couple of four games. We did it today better. So at the end, if there would be a bigger problem, a problem with the players, something like that, it would be worth. But at the end, I know what to do, what is to do in the future, and all the players know what we have to do to get better results. Today we did it, and we try to do it in the Champions League as well, and the next game in the Bundesliga against Dortmund also.
Excited for that?
Yes.
Good. Julian, thank you.
Welcome. Cheers.
Jan, obviously, when things are going wrong, the media are going to target anything they possibly can. And Nagelsmann, with the way that he is, the way that he dresses, the fact he skates forward to work, is kind of a layup for them, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Nagelsmann, welcome to Bayern Munich. I mean, that is what it's all about. Remember, they tried to get Haaland, they didn't get him. They lost then Lewandowski to Barcelona. And they said, oh, it's so great to play without a striker. That makes Nagelsmann's system so much better. He's much more flexible. And then Mané comes and he takes Germany with storm. But he can't score goals in the last four games in the Bundesliga. But still they beat Inter. Still they beat Barcelona. And then they start analysing and everything is wrong. And Bildzeit and Kicker, they are talking to Hoffenheim and RB Leipzig. What was he like when he was there? Well, they said he was younger. That was point number one. And point number two, he doesn't talk to players when he's struggling. And so they checked out at Bayern again. Has he talked to any players? No. That is the big, big problem at Bayern. So the last 2 weeks, he's made so many conversations, Dan. He's to be talking to the players for fun all the time. And then, of course, they come back with a 4-0 win, they've used the international break well. Were we in doubt that they could come back? No, we weren't. But at the same time, Julian Nagelsmann has showed that he is a human being and not just like I called him a lot of times, the Mozart of football. He has shown this time that when they talk about his six, Joshua Kimmich, should he be number six or be a number eight in the team? And Kimmich says, I like the number eight. And he says, I don't want to talk about it. Do you miss Lewandowski? I don't want to talk about it. And so on and so on. And Julian Nagelsmann has also done, and I love that phrase from coaches when they say, we don't listen to anything. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 weeks, he has showed us and told us that he listened to podcasts and he's seen some local papers and everything. But of course, Bayern coming back against Leverkusen, winning 4-0. And about the Krisen, the El Crisico, the one who will probably be taken away is Suana, the Leverkusen coach, and not Julian Nagelsmann, of course. But welcome to Bayern.
It's childish to mock grown-ups that like to skateboard. I often think about skateboarding into work here.
Oh, man.
Down that
road. Imagine it.
I often think about things like that.
Have you ever skateboarded in your life?
Craig, you will never have a coat like Julian Nagelsmann. And just to think of you on a skateboard makes me scared.
Have you ever done it?
I'm a man of many talents.
Yeah, skateboarding is definitely not one of them.
I have many different skateboards at home for all types of weather.
Oh, really?
But, you know, I don't think we should... I really think it is rather unnecessary to be discussing a manager's clothing. Really?
Really?
As I think Archie said yesterday, he's different. Well, you know, it's like talking about players' hairstyles and blah, blah,
right.
blah. At the end of the day, we're here along with newspapers and magazines and other broadcast outlets to analyse tactics, decisions, performances, results. And yeah, he's a bit quirky, but he's a bit quirky. He's not going to get sacked for being quirky. He's not going to be successful by being quirky. It's going to be by what's on the field.
Right.
Not by skateboarding and all this other nonsense. So I think they just found a way to try and... It seems to me they're trying to find a way to get at him a little bit, to get under his skin.
Yeah, but...
Jan, we've got to let you go. No, Jan, yeah, we got time. Jan will be back on extra time. A reminder, the Bundesliga... Look at that.
I tell you what, it was going to be such a good point
Well, it'll be a first. Hertha Berlin against Hoffenheim tomorrow, followed by Schalke against Augsburg. Coverage starts at 9:30. Both of those games, of course, available on ESPN Plus. Water going to help me out a little bit? No, just sat there, useless, thinking about your skateboard.
Well, I'm thinking about skateboarding home. I'm going to get myself ready for my board.
Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. There you go.
There we go.
Perfect.
So, budgets.
Thank you as always for your tweets.
Budgets. I don't have the graphics. Just budgets.
Craig Burley is with us. Shaka Hislop's internet is working, so he didn't have to make the 2-hour drive to work. He's happy.
He was here yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
But he had to come yesterday because his internet wasn't working at home. He was supposed to be at home yesterday.
His mic's not working.
I'd have gotten him some
water. Yeah, it's working now. His air conditioner doesn't work.
Shaka would have got me water.
His lights don't
work. There you are. And Jan, of course, is assuming the position in front of a hotel door. Jan, do you double lock it? You can see, obviously, the safety lock when you go to sleep?
Yes.
Yes.
But look at the new thing that I do have. I have the program in the door where the fire thing is.
But what if there's a fire?
So I kind of improve... Pardon?
What if there's a fire, Jan? That is a hazard. Where will you know where to go?
I know the drill, Jan. I've been in a hotel for 3 years, so I know the drill.
I have my doubts that's the hotel. I think it's a camper van.
You think so?
Outside Erling Haaland's house.
Erling Haaland's shed.
Yeah.
There he is.
He's not the German football-loving expert anymore.
I know, it's a classic. He's not even going next week.
He's not even going to the biggest game in Germany next week.
I know.
He's going for a Norwegian loving.
He's changed. He's definitely changed. I don't have the questions. I'm going to have to read them. Let's take a look at the first one, shall
we? Not much these days, do we?
Sorry? No.
I put the glasses.
The whole place is falling apart. There it is. Question for you, Dan. How do you feel knowing that you clearly understand football more than Stevie regards to Arsenal? Stevie's going to have to pay me $50, isn't he? He's going to hate every moment of that.
No, he actually, as much as you'll find this a surprise, he doesn't mind parting with money.
You always said that with a straight face. Oh, he's going to hate it. He's on tomorrow, by the way. Sling and all. He'll be there. But he told me he hasn't shaved yet because he can't shave.
Why? He's got...
Because he's left-handed and his left hand's in the sling.
Can't shave with his right hand.
I don't think I could. Could you shave with your other hand? It's a bit dangerous. Oh, no.
Well, you can use an electric razor.
Well, he's not going to pay for that, is he? He's got Dollar Club, whatever it is. Yeah. He's got those that come every day in the post. That's that. Right, next question.
Are you on tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
Press him on Arsenal.
Well, he's got to admit now they've improved, surely. For the boys, what percentage chance do you give Arsenal to finish ahead of Liverpool? Ooh, good question. At the end of the season.
Boys.
Go on, Shaq.
Given everything we've seen so far, I think it's 60-40 and it's only that low because of the number of games there are to go. But my word, Liverpool have been poor.
60-40 to Liverpool, Shaq?
No, 60-40 that Arsenal finished. So
right. Jan,
Arsenal,
where do you start now? I'm
going
to try and find the questions we answer. Jan?
Are you walking away? You're not even listening to my answer there, Dan. Okay.
I don't really listen to your answer when I'm on screen anyway, Jan, so it doesn't make a difference.
Fair enough. Now, listen, I think that what Arsenal did today was something new, new in quote, because I think that today was a bit of an exam for them because they're playing against Conte's cynical kind of approach. He would probably say to them, go into these kids. They're just softing around there in the midfield. And we got Heiberg and the generals on our pitch. And today they stood up for themselves, Arsenal, winning 3-1 and a deservedly win against that Tottenham team. And 1-1, Tottenham should have done a lot better. So I will say this is 51 Arsenal, 49 Liverpool.
Oh.
60-40.
For Arsenal?
Yeah, at the moment. The way Liverpool are defending.
Okay. Should Liverpool switch to a back three, Craig, since playing with a four at the back seems not to solve their defensive problems? Also, this would allow Trent more freedom when playing forward, knowing he's got someone to cover for him.
Well, actually, we've had this brief discussion before, a year or two ago. When Liverpool had that horrendous injury list at the back with Van Dijk out for the season.
And yes.
Others were out, Gomez was out, Matip was out. And they had midfielders playing full-back and centre-half. He'd never changed to a back three. So he's unlikely to do it now, would be my answer. And I can't remember him doing it in however many years he's been at Liverpool. This is the way they play, and they're just going to have to get better within that system rather than changing the system, I think. I don't think he will do that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just thinking it's interesting what we saw this week, because you can mean whatever you want about Arnold, but I think that when we listen to Klopp at the press conference, this is a kind of philosophy. You know, he means that when Arnold is actively going forward, that is the way to defend. And I think that he will think when he played three at the back and he will play at the five in the midfield, Trent Arnold, he will even do more defensively work. And that will kind of hurt his ability to go forward, because 3-5-2, for example, that is a quite vulnerable system, because there is a lot of space behind you. And I remember a player like Kostic that I used to know a lot when he played for Frankfurt. When he was playing that system, he was struggling because he ended up being a left back anyway, and he didn't do enough going forward. So I'm not sure that will help Arnold.
Xhaka, has anyone's reputation been more rehabilitated than Xhaka's these past several months? He was crucified by the media, the pundits, booed off the pitch, and fans wanted him gone. Did the removal of the burden of the captain's armband help improve his play?
Oh, yeah.
I think Granit Xhaka's improvement has dated back even before these last few months. He's been very good compared to what he was for at least last season and into this season. Maybe the timing of the question today is poor, in that I felt he could have done a whole lot better for that Spurs goal. I'm not sure why he was trying to head that ball back there to Gabriel. Oh. But he has been good, no question.
Yeah, why are you laughing?
Because I thought the question was about Xhaka. I couldn't believe what has he done, Xhaka, that his reputation is back.
I too am much improved, Jan. I am. There's been no criticism around any of my power rankings, I'll have you know.
Just don't put Xhaka, Hislop and Messi into Twitter. That definitely
has been rehabilitated. Exactly.
You did well to go for it.
Rehabilitated. Doesn't go on as many holidays these days.
No.
He's also opened his own removals business.
Yes, yeah.
He's just ferrying kids around and moving houses. Does anything but work.
No, exactly.
And as we learned yesterday, I'm very fast.
Yes,
it's official.
So we look back at Shaka's FIFA rankings compared to Ali's FIFA rankings.
Right.
And Xhaka was faster than Ali. I don't think you were around in FIFA. Well, you might. No, you were around in FIFA days.
Well, when did it start? I don't know.
Well, it started.
He had to be.
Anyway, it started.
Craig's younger than me. Mightn't look it. But,
if you
but
were faster than me, no chance.
The old FIFAs were like early 90s, weren't they?
I wasn't around.
I don't think they get it.
I didn't stop playing in 2003.
Can you imagine when I tried to make Craig's face without
a smile or anything?
I got a 10 for anger.
Yes, 10 for anger.
Speed, 6. Skill,
blonde
6.
Hair, no teeth.
Yeah. Anger, looks, 10.
Anger, yeah.
Anger, 10.
Looks 10. Oh, my
anger
God.
10.
Looks 10 with the blonde hair.
You'd have been a championship manager, wouldn't you, back in the day?
I don't play these games. I have no idea what that is.
No, that's a good game. That's where you're the manager of the team. Yeah. Oh, it's very exciting.
Oh, that was exciting.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a sensible answer.
Jan, did you always sign yourself?
No, but I stopped playing when my son was 5 because I was losing against him, and then I stopped playing FIFA. But I love the football managers thing.
Oh, no, I have my questions and I've lost them again. Here we go.
Useless.
Here we go.
I tell you, one of the things with Xhaka.
Right. Xhaka or Xhaka? Who are we talking about?
Saka.
We're talking about Granit Xhaka because he's improved.
Okay.
Unlike the, I think having Thomas Partey fit and playing consistently well, whenever that is, and I think he is playing well, takes a big burden off Xhaka as well.
For Jan, if Bayern Munich go in search of a striker, how do you think a player like Tammy Abraham can do in a team like Bayern?
Oh, he would do well, because every striker would do well at Bayern, because there's come to a lot of chances. But I don't think they will go to Tammy Abraham. That's the interesting thing about Bayern at the moment is that they are going for Harry Kane. I mean, I can't see that happening, sorry. And Bayern fans hate me for that, because they like a number nine. They like we said in the main program, they wanted to have Haaland, they wanted to keep Lewandowski, and then they lost them both, but they need a number nine, and they hope that Harry Kane won't sign or extend his contract, that is, I guess it's up to 2024, but he has to start talking about a contract next season. So I don't think they will take Tammy Abraham. Will he do well for them? Of course he will. Every Bayern Munich striker would score 25 goals.
Jan, obviously you posted a picture today of you and Jules together. I think it was in the Arsenal press room. A lot of people questioning whether or not you're tall or Jules is short.
He's very short.
Yeah, he's shorter than me.
No,
I think he is.
Sometimes in life are an impossibility.
No,
I'm just joking. He is a tall French guy.
He's not tall. I've met him. I think he's like 5'4".
It was fantastic.
No,
it's the second time I met him, and he's much, much taller than I thought.
Shaka, where did you meet Jules?
I've never met Jules.
Well, so how do you know how tall he is?
I just can't imagine Jules. Another grown person being shorter than you. Fully grown person.
Yeah, but I'm still growing, Shane. That's the difference.
But boys, for me sitting in these hotel rooms around Europe, and just see that you guys are real. I didn't know that. I meet Jules, this is the second time I met him. I thought Jules was a thing that was made up. I think he was a cartoon from Obelix and Asterix, and suddenly he's there. He's there!
He was over with all the journals a few months ago.
Yeah.
He came
and said hello, didn't he? And then you've got Gab, who's just kind of bigger than you would expect in everywhere, all areas.
I don't think he's bigger than expected. He's as expected. But Jules is not that... He's not that small, is he?
Jules,
I mean, he was sitting down, I think.
He's not really 5'4".
He was next to me. He was stood up at sitting down.
Jan, Wikipedia says you're 6'5". Is that right?
No, incorrect.
How much is that in centimetre? I'm 6'7", I think. I'm
six,
very, very
seven.
tall. No, but it's interesting. Can you imagine if you meet Craig Burley for the first time and people are like,
charming.
Are you that angry in real life?
No.
You know?
No.
I mean,
charming. Helpful.
Craig's quite nice to start with, then he turns.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes. And you get to know him.
I played against him.
I'm charming.
195 centimetres, apparently, Jan.
On a good day, with Alexander McQueen's shoe, I would probably be that.
No chance.
Final question. Will Haaland, your friend, Erling Haaland's dad, got some stick yesterday, Jan, for what he had to say about 2.5 years here, 3 years there, with regarding Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Will Haaland's clubs in Spain, Italy and France be determined by Jan's favourite vacation spots or by what cities and hotels he collects rewards points from?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can just have a look. You can just have a look what he did after Salzburg. We had a TV rights there in Germany, and then Premier League in Norway, and he went there. And yes, I saw that Alfie got some sticks. I have him pitch side tomorrow, and we will talk about that, because I think I need a bit warmer now in the winter. So maybe if we can get Erling moved in January to maybe Barcelona or something. I need some heat.
Oh, there we go.
And, so he will probably do that.
I demand that we have
What do you demand? What do you demand?
I demand that we have some sort of finality to who is the smallest ESPN FC pundit. Personality, well, journalist, whatever you want to call them. We get them all here and we'll line them up at the back of the studio. It's done once and for all.
It would go Jules.
No. We must.
Jules, 5'4".
No, everybody's involved.
So Seb, 5'5". I'm 5'9", so probably a bit of a jump there.
Gomez isn't exactly a giant.
No, Herc's quite tiny.
So we could get all these people. In fact, if we're really desperate, we'll get some of the Deportes boys in, because they're not the tallest either.
Who would be the biggest? Shaka? I'm bigger than K, aren't I? I'm taller than K.
What? I'm saying nothing.
Yeah, I think so. Shaka, would you be the tallest or Jan? How many centimetres are you, Shaq?
I think I'm taller than Jan.
There we go.
I don't know how many centimetres I am. I'm six four and a half.
I remember playing as Shaka. I felt he was very small.
There you are, because Gab is 6'5".
Gab is not 6'5".
He is 6'5". Hey, he's huge, Gab.
Are you up for this? The only problem is you're going to have to come in for it.
Everyone's going to line up against the wall.
It's not a hardship for you.
It's all right. It's okay. Give it to Gab. It's okay.
Gab's the tallest. Seb's just messaged me. Do you think it's some abuse about my height? 5'5", you snake. That's not very nice, is it, Seb?
Who said that?
Seb. That was generous.
Does he really get nothing better to do with these Saturday nights?
Well, whoever's watching this hasn't got anything better to do with their Saturday nights. It's kind of like...
Him and Gomez, 5 foot, I reckon, between the two of them.
Yeah. Yes.
What about
11
Al?
Feet.
Al?
I reckon Al? 11 feet between
the two.
But they
wear their telly award on their head, so that makes them taller.
Seb's a bit 5'8 if he was sat on a horse.
That is it. What a nonsense conversation this has been. That is it. We are done. Have a lovely time tomorrow with the Haalands, Jan. Shaq, are you working tomorrow?
No.
No surprise.
All to work on Sundays.
Oh, dear. We will be back tomorrow to reflect on the Manchester Derby plus Real Madrid against Osasuna.